What's up, guys? Saf here on Super Saf Speaks, and welcome to episode number 34 of the podcast. We've been consistent every month, which is good, of 2024. It's with myself, of course, your host, Super Saf, and my co-host.
And Thunder E from Border Work wearing all black today.
Yeah, all black. Well, it's we didn't have a call before this, but we are matching, but it's not hard to sync up with me because I'm always wearing black, right?
That is very true. That's very true.
Right. So today we're going to be talking about the Galaxy Z Fold 6. We've got some really juicy leaks and rumors. Things are coming together. So we've started to get a bit of a picture about what it's going to be like. Apple's being sued by the US, which is quite interesting. I mean, this news came out a few weeks ago, so we'll discuss that in a bit more detail. Apple's also potentially developing some personal robots for your own home, which is exciting, of course. And Google wants to potentially charge you for AI-powered search. We've got a lot of AI, and a lot of this AI requires a lot of processing power. So that's looking like there's going to be more subscriptions coming up for a lot of things. But of course, we're going to start with the Galaxy Z Fold 6. Now, we've seen some nice detailed renders from OnLeaks, as always. We've got some more renders from TT Technology as well, which look pretty exciting. First thing I want to say about the Galaxy Fold series is that obviously it is the original Fold series, and I've loved those devices pretty much every year. However, it did feel to me that last year things were starting to get a bit, like, not too exciting, should we say, because the competition is, you know, doing great. We had the OnePlus Open, which was one of my favorites, as well as the Honor Magic V2, which was, I think, you know, an even better and probably the best foldable hardware that you've got out there, right? Now, yep. It seems like, you know, Samsung, because there isn't a huge deal of competition in the West anyway, it's kind of like a little bit chill. It's like, you know what? It's okay. You know, we can just carry on doing incremental updates. But that, I think, kind of backfired for them last year. So I think this year they definitely have to do something big. What's interesting, though, is a lot of the leaks and rumors are saying that we're going to have two new Galaxy Z Fold devices. There's going to be a Galaxy Z Fold 6, which is going to be kind of like an incremental update. But then there's going to be a Z Fold 6 Ultra, which is going to be the more exciting device with some more changes. The renders, Anubhav, I'm sure you've seen, but from OnLeaks, it's looking like we're going to have much more of a boxy frame with flat sides, which you know, I think looks pretty good. And, you know, kind of reminds me a little bit of the OnePlus Open with its more sort of flat edges.
It looks pretty good. I'm hoping that it's bigger, less crease, design-wise, kind of hits all the marks that we want, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm praying that we have an S Pen in there. I'm just praying for an S Pen.
Okay.
That's it for me. Built in.
I'm sorry to bust your bubble there, E, but it looks like from the leaks and rumors right now, we are not seeing any mount or storage for the S Pen on the leaked renders, at least for now, right? So, you know, maybe that might change. Again, we don't know. But so far, the leaks and rumors are not saying that we're going to have something like this. In terms of the dimensions, it's going to be around 1.4 millimeters shorter, around 2.6 millimeters wider. Now, that will that was my biggest thing about the Z Fold 5, which is that it's still got a narrow screen, which is too narrow in my opinion, right? If you're using the device closed, then it's just not the best experience. It's just way too narrow. This time, it looks like it's probably going to have around 22:9 aspect ratio, which makes it a lot more usable, right? That's what the leaks and rumors are saying. However, that might be just for one of the versions, you know, that the Ultra version, shall we say. Again, we're not sure if this is going to be called the Ultra, but that's what it's looking like. Ice Universe has also said that the Z Fold 6 will weigh around 239 grams, which is quite a bit lower. It's just a little bit more than a normal, you know, standard flagship device that we have these days. I think the Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra is around, you know, 230-something grams, like, you know.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so a few more grams for a foldable device, you know, I'm all down for. Obviously, the Honor Magic V2 is the one that's the slimmest out there, which is really good. So yeah, there have been some discussions between some of the leakers, like Ice Universe and OnLeaks, you know, about the numbers. the current dimensions that we're talking about is do seem like they might be for the Ultra, and that's the one we're going to be a bit more excited about, right? But it might be the case that the regular versions, you know, kind of like, okay, look, if you like the Fold, you prefer that slimmer sort of narrow front display, and you want something that might be a little bit cheaper, then fine, go for that. But if you want some of these updates that a lot of people will be talking about, then you can go for the Ultra version.
Yeah. My problem with this kind of like split, you know, premium versus regular Fold is the fact that the Fold was supposed to be the premium anyway, in the first place. And what kind of prices are we going to get? We don't know. No one has stated anything about price, but that's going to be a very interesting thing to see. Will we see the regular Fold 6 be even cheaper? Maybe a $1,200? Dare I say? I'm just putting that out there.
I think $1,200 is a push. Maybe like, I would say, and this is just a 14? Guess, right? I would say the Fold 6 Ultra will be at the standard price, which the Fold mm-hmm. is what usually at. It's what, $1,750 around about right now?
Yeah, roughly.
$1,750, $1,800. But then I would say that the regular Fold is probably around $1,400. I don't know. That's just me putting out some numbers out there. I might be wrong.
You heard it first. Saf predicted pricing, release date, availability, and all sorts. So get ready to pre-order your Folds.
Well, release date has already been rumored for around the 10th of July. Yes, from the research that I've been doing. So it's looking like it's going to be quite early this year, because usually it's kind of like late July, August time. So now they're kind of pushing it earlier, which is interesting. In terms of other leaks, like, you know, 2,600 nits of peak brightness, 7 years of Android updates, like we've got on the Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra and, well, the S24 series. Cameras, it looks like they're going to be the same. Like, in terms of the hardware of the cameras, it doesn't look like anything's changing. It looks like it's going to be the same. However, we are going to be getting, of course, the Qualcomm Snapdragon 8 Gen 3. Now, with that, obviously, we're going to get the new ISP, the new image signal processor. So that might give you some improvements, but nothing too exciting on that side of things. I think for me, I think the biggest thing is wider aspect ratio, which means it's more usable when it's closed. And that's something that I can see myself using, because, you know, Samsung has been doing this for the longest time, which means the software is, you know, very optimized when it comes to the folding device compared to mm-hmm. many other devices. So I think this is going to be like the real wake-up call for Samsung. Like, okay, now you need to do something, because now you have some real competition from OnePlus and Honor.
Yeah, I hope so. I'm just interested to see what they do with the pricing, the camera. I mean, I don't want to believe the rumors that the camera's the same. I'm hoping we get at least the Galaxy S23 Ultra camera setup. I'm wishful thinking over here, but it will be interesting to see what happens, especially since, and I kind of know why they have the earlier release date, at least from the rumors. Olympics are happening at the end of July, beginning of August, and Samsung is an Olympic sponsor. So,
interesting.
Put two and two together.
Okay.
Makes sense.
And that will be a good way to push it out there. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, we'll see. Based on the current leaks and rumors, right? So, no integrated S Pen. Right, obviously we've got all of the improvements, the wider aspect ratio, the thinner form factor overall, lighter form factor as well. You know, based on all of these updates, would you switch? That is the question.
No S Pen, not switching.
Okay, so that's what the deal breaker is for you. For me, I would say that if it does tick those boxes for me, I would probably switch. Right, because I would have switched to the Honor Magic V2. The problem is obviously the support here, like in terms of it's not a device that's you know, had that initial release everywhere, so that was you know, kind of the downside. But then we're gonna get the new version of that as well. So when you think about it from that way, it's just like, okay, this is gonna come along, but then obviously the competitions is not gonna just sit down and be like, all right, you know, we're just gonna take a break this year. No, they're gonna be producing, like, you know, OnePlus. What are they gonna come up with this year? Who knows?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's exciting, you know, more for us. And I'm definitely looking forward to it. So 10th of July is the date that you need to put in your diaries, and make sure you follow us on our main channels for the coverage. Next topic we have. So the Justice Department is suing Apple for monopolizing smartphone markets. Now, this was some big news that landed, you know, just a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, everybody was talking about it. And this is something that we obviously couldn't ignore. just give you a bit of a summary. You know, I'm on the justice.gov website, and they've got like five main points that they're kind of, you know, basing this lawsuit on. First is that Apple is blocking innovative super apps. So Apple has disrupted the growth of apps with broad functionality that would make it easier for consumers to switch between competing smartphone platforms, right? The second one is suppressing mobile cloud streaming services. Apple has blocked the development of cloud streaming apps and services that would allow consumers to enjoy high-quality video games and other cloud-based applications without having to pay for expensive smartphone hardware. Three, excluding cross-platform messaging apps. Now, this is a key one, I think, especially in the US, right? Apple has made the quality of cross-platform messaging worse, less innovative and less secure for users, so that it's customers have to keep buying iPhones. Fourth is diminishing the functionality of non-Apple smartwatches. Apple has limited the functionality of third-party smartwatches so that users who purchase the Apple Watch face substantial out-of-pocket costs if they do not keep buying iPhones. And finally, limiting third-party digital wallets. Apple has prevented third-party apps from offering tap-to-pay functionality, inhibiting the creation of cross-platform third-party digital wallets, right? Now, there's a lot there, right? First thing I want to say is, okay, so we've all heard of this walled garden that Apple has, right? If you're within this walled garden, sunshine, rainbows, everything works, everything's harmonious. As soon as you step out, things just, you know, you can't, like...
It falls apart.
It falls apart, right? Now, I just want to say this, right? If I was Apple, right? Now, this is the business side of me talking. I would do exactly the same thing. I want this walled garden because I want people to carry on buying my products. I want them to enjoy that synced experience when you're inside this walled garden. And if you're out of it, it's like, hey, you're missing out, so come in. So I totally understand from a business perspective, and I would do exactly the same thing. Let me just say that. However, as a consumer, right? I totally agree that, you know, some of these practices, like, for example, the Lightning cable, I'm glad the EU stepped in, and we've got USB-C. I've been traveling a lot over the past couple of months, and guess what? I've not had to take multiple cables around with me. I just have USB Type-C, and it just makes so much sense. It makes my life easier. It makes every customer's lives easier, but that was something that they had to get forced to do, right? Because, again, with Lightning, things are very, like, controlled by Apple, and they're also more profitable because all of the Lightning accessories that you have, all of these things. So that's just one thing that I want to say off the bat, right? And I know, E, you're kind of like waiting to say something. So what are your thoughts on that so far?
This is a very interesting one because the rule of thumb is if the US government goes after you, you're going to lose the case. That's just the general rule of thumb because there's a lot of things in the document. I think it's like 110 pages or something like that. But one of the biggest things that I've noticed from online Discord where people are like, hey, Apple has the rights to do that, right? You can do all these different things, is that it's not about Apple doing it. It's the limitations on the other end is where most of the concern is. So, you know, for example, Apple, yes, has the right to have an Apple Watch, but it also means that you should be able to use another Apple Watch. I mean, it's a Galaxy Watch or you know, the OnePlus Watch, and have a smooth experience on there. One of the bigger ones that I think is really also going to really affect this case is the game streaming platforms. Microsoft tried, and we saw this. Everybody kind of saw where Microsoft said Xbox Game Pass, we want to have it, and Apple stipulated that Xbox Game Pass has to list every single game as a game on the App Store. And Microsoft said, "It's our service is like Netflix. Netflix doesn't list all the movies as individual downloads. So why are we doing this?" And of course, that kind of went on the wayside. And almost a year and a half later, Apple started pushing its own games directly, triple A games on the iPhone. So again, this kind of gives the federal government a very clear distinction on like, hey, you know, this is what you're doing. And of course, we know the claims on text messages and the blue bubble, green bubble stuff all there. and I think that's going to be, look, I'll put it this way. Green bubbles and blue bubbles have had destroyed a few of my dates that I've had in the past. People refused to respond to me because I had that. So it's a real thing.
No, because what's very interesting is, right, is that this blue bubble, green bubble thing seems to be almost exclusive to the US, right? Because everywhere else you use other applications, you know, WhatsApp, Telegram. I posted a meme about this when people were kind of talking about this, and I was like, everybody outside of the US is like, we use WhatsApp anyway, right? Now, again, it's replacing one app with another, right? Giving your control from one place to another. But regardless, the fact is that with WhatsApp, whether you're on an Android device or, you know, an Apple device, the experience is not affected, right? It still works as expected on both, and it's absolutely fine. And that's something that I think in the UK, pretty much everybody I know that even uses like iPhones, that they won't even touch another Android device, right? For them, it's almost like an insult to suggest that they would use an Android device, right? They will use WhatsApp. So the only time I see them using iMessage, and you know, like, is if they're going to use that to go through to do a FaceTime call or something like that, right? But when it comes to day to day outside of the US, this is not really an issue because most people use WhatsApp. Now, having said that, I know in the US this is a big issue because the green bubble, blue bubble thing, and I think in particular with the youngsters, because if you look at the statistics, right, when it comes to teens, most of them are now opting to use iPhones. So from Apple's side of things, it's working because now you've got this walled garden, right? And if you want to be part of that walled garden, you need an iPhone. Like, I've seen it firsthand with, you know, my friend's kids who will be like, they're like 15 and they're like, I need an iPhone. Like, there's nothing. Like, there is literally no compromise. I don't want an Android, I want an iPhone. They would rather get an older, like a 3-year-old iPhone, than to get a brand new Android device. That's how much it is. Now, again, I want to emphasize, from a business perspective, this is genius. Like, you know, if I had shares in Apple, I'd be like, yeah, brilliant. Keep going, right? But from a consumer perspective, I totally get it. Like, you know, this is not good because it is literally like, you know, I've heard of some instances where it's almost like a bit of a bullying culture for kids, right? That, oh, you don't have an iPhone? Like, you know, what's this? Like, you know, okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
You're not going to be part of our group chats because you are like considered inferior, which is really, really bad, obviously, especially for kids.
Yeah, no, it is. It's become a bully culture. It's become one of those things where it also messes up the group chat because you can't send images. The quality looks less. You know, all these different things. So, you know, kids go like, hey, what's this blurry photo? I'm like, oh, it's a green bubble guy. They're, you know what? Never mind. Forget it. Let's just have a separate chat for us. And then we can just say hi once in a while. So those kind of things happen. But I think one of the interesting things is that the US government is using their case against Microsoft in the 90s, the antitrust case, which is exactly the same thing. Microsoft made sure, you know, early browsers like Netscape didn't work well. You could only have, you know, when you open up a PC, it was only Microsoft applications. You know, Microsoft also had other bullying tactics they did behind the scene by paying other companies to make sure that, you know, it was only Windows stuff that was there. I mean, Microsoft stuff that was software was there. So I think that comes into play. But I also think on the other hand, moving past this just a little bit, is how does this affect the role of AI? In the sense that, you know, we're now in this world where, you know, everybody's either having AI to generate things, AI for communication. And the idea that, you know, because I perceive a future where I would either use, say, maybe Microsoft's Copilot or Gemini from Google or, you know, whatever Amazon brings up. And that's my personal assistant. And I wanted to be able to communicate with everything, whether it's like, you know, send a message to my wife with like a list of things and not have compatibility issues. Because that's where we all want to go. We want to be able to just use the stuff. Does this hurt or help Apple in the long run? Because I think it will help them in the long run, but I think in the short term, this is going to be a big blow to them just because then it kind of, you know, it opens up that walled garden. It's, you know, things like if Xbox Game Pass is now easily available, do I actually want to buy Resident Evil or just stream it for a flat fee a month and play other games, right? Mm-hmm. And things with music or even messaging where that foothold is, you know, it's pretty strong here. I'm not saying that people will move to other devices because I don't think that's necessarily the case, but it just means that other services, which is what Apple makes a lot of money from, are going to kind of dissipate, you know.
Because, I mean, there was a whole debate between, obviously, there was a whole lawsuit with Epic Games and Apple, right? And then there was, Apple 30%. So any payments that are made on the Apple App Store, through the Apple App Store, 30% that they get a cut off, which, you know, I get for the first one, right? Okay, so then you're purchasing an app or something. But then if you're purchasing like a subscription, because right now on Twitter X, right, if you want to purchase a subscription on your iPhone or on your Android device, it costs more. But if you go onto your web browser separately and then you make the subscription, then it's a lot cheaper. Because obviously, it's just like, so I think to me, that's like, okay, 30% is a bit of a push, right? Okay, that's, you know, for ongoing payments, especially. Again, it makes them a lot of money. It makes Apple a lot of money. It makes Android a lot of money. But I think it is a little bit of like, oh, really? Like, even, actually, one thing that actually surprised me a lot, right, was, you know, when you're like, say, for example, you're following your favorite streamer and then you want to, you know how they do the super thanks and all of these different things where you're actually like paying. They take 30% of that as well.
Yes, they do. It's so bad because there's a YouTuber that I follow, I know pretty well. He does a lot of like superhero rumors and, you know, stuff like that. And it got to a point where he had to set up his own PayPal gifting because PayPal only charges you a fee, like a very simple flat fee. For him to do that, because, you know, I remember I came in, he was dropping some stuff about, you know, Zack Snyder's Justice League. I came in, I made a nice donation, and then he sent me a message. It's like, oh, bro, I wanted to tell you no. Because with super... on YouTube, it's almost 40%, I think. I could be wrong. Somebody correct me, but it's a high number. And I was like, wait a minute. I just gifted half my money.
Yeah. No, but okay, so see it as if you're a streamer or somebody like that, right? Okay, so somebody gives you... So say in total, you make a large amount. Say you make $1 million, all right? Okay, this is just me putting a hypothetical number out there. All right, they take 30%. So, you know, Apple or Android are really happy because they've got $300,000. Hey, cheers, yeah? Now, don't get me wrong. I understand they're providing the service. They're the ones who have set up it. I get that, all of that, right? Mm-hmm. But it's still, regardless, it's a large chunk, okay? Then the platform might take a certain fee, right? So as you're saying, hypothetically, so then you ended up with $600,000. Okay, great. Guess what? That $600 isn't yours yet because now you have to go through the tax system, right? So then you get taxed, right? And obviously, if you're getting $600,000, you're going to be on a high tax rate. So, you know, in the UK, that's almost 50%, right? That you're going to be losing out if you want to get that money into your pocket. So out of the $1 million that you've made, you're only going to be getting roughly around $300,000, if that, right? That actually coming into your pocket, maybe $250,000.
Then expenses, right? There's expenses. Yeah. You have to all that stuff. Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it's a very interesting space, which actually kind of caused Microsoft to Xbox's president Phil Spencer came out, I think, 2 weeks ago and stated that he wants to have Steam, Epic on the Xbox. Now, to me, it feels like Microsoft is already trying to preempt even them being used as a counter argument from Apple saying, hey, look at the Xbox platform. It's only Xbox games or, you know, things like that. Because even Phil Spencer had stated this a couple of years ago, and he said he kind of stated, like, we might just do 15%. I think 15% is good enough for us. Because he's like, we're still making money regardless. So if you're going to buy it from Steam, at least just do it on the Xbox platform. We can make some money. That's how he's looking at it. So I think it's an interesting game that is going to force Apple to change their business model, which means they might need to make some new products, or they might have to come up with services that I think are more interesting to other people. Or better yet, Apple TV should be available on Android. It's not. It's only available on
Interesting.
You know,
I mean,
things like that.
I think whatever happens, right? you know, it's obviously going to take some time. Lawsuits take forever and stuff like that. But because it's from the US, you know, like you're saying that it's probably going to go in their favor, right? Overall.
Yeah, I think it will go in the US government's favor, because whenever they go against a company like this, there's heavily stacked evidence against them. And also they would use things like the lawsuit that said, remember, there was a lawsuit that Apple lost to a group of people that said they were slowing down our iPhones with updates. Is also in this filing as well. So there's already precedent set that basically will supersede. And I think Apple may start changing some of these things themselves, so that at least the mitigation losses they take on the, you know, on the court case is little. We've seen rumors that iOS 18 will allow you to now rearrange your home screen. You can put your apps anywhere now, it looks like, from iOS 18.
Finally.
Yeah. Finally. So I'm just saying, those are the kind of steps you will see come out from Apple that would change things.
All right. Let's see. I mean, I think overall it's going to be a win for consumers regardless. I think overall, especially if, you know, you do have people in the Apple ecosystem. As I said, like the change of USB Type-C, thumbs up from me. Yeah, you know, absolutely was needed, and I'm glad it's here, and I'm glad it will be there going forward. And a few of these other changes, yeah, I mean, bringing them on. Let's see. It's going to take some time, but overall, I would say it's a positive thing. Now, another story regarding Apple. Apparently, Apple is developing personal robots for your home. This is from Bloomberg. Apple is on the hunt for the next revolutionary product to help it maintain dominance in the market and to serve as a new source of revenue after abandoning its plans to develop an electronic vehicle of its own. Now, obviously, we heard this recently. Apple abandoned its plans for an EV. I mean, this had been going on for a while, hadn't it? All these rumors about them, you know, developing, you know, like,
yeah,
a smart car that would be, you know, potentially around starting price around $100,000. But it kind of seems like, I think the EV market itself has kind of like slowed down, hasn't it? Like, I don't know how it is in the US, but in the UK, people are kind of like, eh. It's like before there was like this whole boost of excitement. Now everything's just like dropped value massively. My Tesla's gone down hugely.
Oh, it is massively dropped. And one of the biggest indications was from 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks ago. I had a BMW i7. I drove it out, went to a charging station, and a lot of people were so angry just because there was not enough chargers. And I would just quickly talk to all the owners there, and they were like, next car, I'm switching. I'm going to a hybrid. Like most people were like, I'll do a hybrid, but I'm kind of done with EVs right now. I think yeah, there was too much of a push without scaling infrastructure and range at the same time needed to go forward, which, you know, yeah, it makes sense and for Apple also, not to jump in.
There's also the argument of up until your vehicle does around, I think it's, again, this is me just kind of on top of my head from articles that I've read, that until your car does around 80,000 miles, right, it's not actually like counted the carbon emissions to produce the battery, right? So then if you're considering it as a greener alternative, like you, until you've driven it for 80,000 miles, up until that point, you've done zero for carbon emissions, right? Now, just to give you an example, I've had my Tesla Model 3 for 4 years now, and I've done about 40,000 miles on it, right? Okay. So I'm still halfway there. So I'm still not carbon neutral yet, right? Okay. So it's only anything after that. So, I mean, there's obviously, that's not the be all and end all. There's a lot more factors that go into it. I know this is just like one of the factors that a lot of people mention, which is interesting. So yeah, it's just been so interesting how that shift has kind of gone. Like even the UK, they had like a deadline, was it 2030, that all, you know, new vehicles need to be non-combustion engine vehicles, but that's now been pushed to 2035, I believe. So like,
yeah,
you know, they're starting to be a bit more. Initially it was like, yeah, let's go. And then suddenly it started going down. All of the incentives as well. Like for instance, right now in London, I remember I used to be able to park my Tesla like in Camden, which is very, very close to central, like proper central London, like, you know, just, you know, a 10-minute walk to King's Cross, right? I used to be able to park my car there for like 2 hours for like 20p, which is like, you know, 25 cents for you Americans out there. And I was like, this is amazing. And I remember tweeting about it and stuff. Last time I went there, it cost me like 16 quid. So I'm like, yeah. I mean, there's still no congestion charge, so.
those incentives have gone, but I think what it is they just needs to be more competition in the market, in the sense that better hybrids. And also one of the things that I'm really excited for is Toyota has a hydrogen engine. Now, not to confuse with a fuel cell car. Fuel cell means it just basically converts it into electricity from a fuel cell and stores, and then you can use it. This is a combustion engine that runs on hydrogen. So basically a physical engine block, and it still emits only water, and it does 700 mile range. They just tested a vehicle on a race, like it's a race similar to like Le Mans, to use the engine, and it worked really well. So I'm excited for that, you know, because it number one, it's a new entry. Number two, it does push EV manufacturers to give us better battery life, better range, all that stuff. It's just more competition. It just means everybody has to do better. Even gasoline cars, maybe even they might go, okay, we could do 50 miles per gallon instead of, you know, 32 or something. You know, that's what I would like to see in general.
It'll be interesting. I mean, we started off talking about this Apple robot. We just gone into EV talks. But anyway.
I know. Speaking of the robot, though, I was going to say that I do need it here in the office. This is a new office, by the way, guys. Apologize for not stating it, but I need to. Oh, yeah. I need something to help me clean and arrange all the things that I have. So if Apple can do that, that would be great.
Yeah, let's see. I mean, so but just to give you a brief overview, according to Bloomberg's Mark Gurman, one of the areas the company is exploring is personal robotics. It's reportedly starting to look at robots and electronic vehicles at the same. It reportedly started looking at robots and electric vehicles at the same time with the hopes of developing a machine that doesn't need human intervention. Now, it's early stages, so initially it's going to be like what they're kind of working on potentially is something that's going to be quite simple, you know, something that helps kind of move around a table when you're having a meeting and things like that. But, you know, that could eventually can develop into something like a Tesla. Tesla bot, right, that we've been seeing. And it's quite cool how Marquez's April Fool's piece was like some of the Tesla robots in and around his office. I'm not sure if you saw that. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, I saw that. That was cool, though. It'd be interesting to see. I think the space is ripe, especially in Western and, you know, developed countries, as they say, because they have a larger, older generation. And, you know, less younger people. So, you know, automation, robots, AI, all these things are coming. You know, it's the era of the Jetsons.
It's interesting, right? Because, you know, I think obviously we're very early stages for things like that, right? And I think the upfront cost for something like that. So say, for example, you have this, you know, bot who's going to do your cleaning and stuff around. We've already got like, you know, robot vacuum cleaners and things like that. But then I guess the argument's going to be, all right, so how much do you have to spend up front to get something like this in your house? Or maybe there's going to be like a payment plan and things like that, right? And how good is it going to be versus just hiring somebody to come in, right? So what was interesting is I was in Dubai just a few weeks ago, and they have an app called Careem. So all of the Middle Eastern viewers will know about this. Careem is like, you know, the all-inclusive app. So not only can you like book taxis like you can do with Uber, but you can also, you know, order food all through the one app. So you know how you have Uber and you have Uber Eats? No, this is all in one app. You can get your taxis. But then there's like additional services, right? So I was just browsing through it, right? And then it's like, oh, get a cleaner. So what you can do is you can just be like, all right, you know, had people over or whatever, or just, you know, had a party or gathering at my house. I need some cleaners. You just go into the app, you book a cleaner to come down at whatever time you specify, right? For a couple of hours, maybe more, how many cleaners you want, and boom, as easy as that. And I was just like, man, this is like, wow, this is really convenient, and it's quite inexpensive as well. I was like, man, that's so cool. Now, obviously, if it's, you know, there's that. If it's that convenient to get a human to come over and do the cleaning rather than having this bot, I think at least initially the bots, you know, when we do get them for the next 10 years or so, will just be like a, you know, like a show off tool for like people who can afford it. But I don't know. My argument's always, how practical is it? Especially now that we've got, you know, apps like Careem where you can do all of this, like get a human in very quickly and easily.
No, I do agree. I think the idea of having a personal robot is all about what functionality. And to be fair, like you said, we technically have those already. And I'm not talking about the robot vacuum. The dishwasher is one, right? In a sense, you don't have to do all the dishes. You just have to put it in there. So I think to a large degree, it's either Apple has to find a way to either intersect those markets or come into a space where it's not really available, which might be more in a business or office situation. But even that still, it's difficult. So to me, the bigger thing really is AI itself, like the personal assistant, you know, where it's somebody who's taking calls for you, you know, set up meetings. And people might think that that's not serious. But here's the thing. Most people work a 9-to-5 job, and then, you know, you have bills to pay, or you have to call, set up a doctor's appointment for your children. You don't have time throughout the day to do that. Once you tell your AI actually does that for you, right? Like, those are the things, those chores and those things that we tend have to wait for the weekend, or can I get off early from work, like at 3 p.m. so I can run over, or I can make this call and do it. That's what those kind of services are for.
I'm pretty sure most people just make the call while they're out at work when the manager's not around.
I mean, yeah, most people will do that.
But I know what you're saying.
Yeah, you know how it is. Sometimes you're on hold forever, right?
it's annoying, isn't it? But yeah, try getting an appointment with the doctors here in the UK. people who watch it from the UK will know exactly what I'm talking about. You have to call up at 8 a.m. You have to sit there and fight with other people in the queue initially to try to get through. And then you finally get through and they're like, oh, no more appointments available today. It's like, oh, great. But anyway, it's still better than many other places. So don't get me wrong. But it's just a funny thing that I thought about. So now, okay, with this whole bot thing, here's my question, right? Will it be, you know, with this AI assistant thing that you're saying, right? Will it be a physical robot that walks around and, you know, like, you know, what we've seen in some movies? Or will it be, you know, what was that movie where it's like kind of integrated and you hear the voice?
Her?
Yeah. Will it be like that?
I think it's something like that. I think more like Her. And I think, you know, like for Apple to make it work robotically, they will have to release a different set of devices. So it's almost like if you look at it from a Samsung, keep Apple aside for a second, Samsung is technically closer. You know, I just went to a Samsung event with Samsung Bespoke Appliances. They talked about AI a lot, and they also mentioned that they're getting an upgrade with, I believe it's Gemini. They didn't say specifically, but either Gemini or ChatGPT style functionality will be coming later on this year to give it more functionality and breadth. But the cool thing about it was, I could pick up something from my fridge, send the recipe to my range. The oven starts pre-baking all the steps that I need, as long as I mix my stuff and put it in there. And then while I'm doing laundry, I can take a phone call. Not because I want to, just because I'm doing laundry, I don't have my phone. If somebody calls me or there's someone at the doorbell. So if Apple can bring the same, now think of it as the walled garden, as we mentioned earlier. If you bring that in together and you have an AI assistant that can mesh that for you, I think those are the steps that will make sense, as opposed to necessarily having a walking around, you know, robot that's walking around your house and cutting onions and moving things for you, because that will probably be there. But
an AI robot with a knife this is getting to the point where I'm like, okay, I'm not sure I want it with a knife.
Look, I said that. You can see Saf's face. Saf is like,
No. Well, it's funny because, you know, when the Tesla bot, what did they call it? What's the name for the Tesla bot? I've just completely forgotten about it.
I can't remember. I really can't remember, honestly.
So anyway, let's just refer to it as the Tesla bot. And they were saying, like, the maximum speed it can run is 5 miles an hour, okay? So people are like, oh, you can all easily outrun it if it went crazy and it went chasing after you. And I'm like, yeah, but how many people can run for, I mean, this is 5 miles per hour, but it's not going to get tired. It can keep going. So you can be running, but eventually you're going to be like, I'm tired. I don't have the stamina.
Pray its battery's at like 10% or something, because if not.
That's what it is. But like we've seen iRobot, we've seen all of these movies, we've seen The Terminator, and it's like, I'm not sure I want this guy hanging around, but I mean, it might be the case. I mean, we're talking about this right now. We're laughing about it. Who knows? In like 10 years' time, it might just be like absolutely normal. And like, oh, yeah, yeah. Meet Greg, the robot that is here.
Yeah. But I think we'll see that, though, for assisted care living for older people, especially those who have money or at least, you know, facilities where you can pay for it. Maybe not as much as a personal one at home, but at least in a facility where that will augment humans, especially lifting elderly people, things like that. I can see that happening, definitely, because it just, you know, it cuts out. And also it means that you always have somebody around or something around to monitor your parents, especially if they're much older, just in case. If you're not around or whatever the case may be, or if you just like to put your parents in a nursing home, which I'm not going to do, I'm just saying. That's
if something. You're one of those evil people that is going to do that, then look, so what Enabog's saying, right, he's not only saying that you're going to put them into a nursing home, he's actually saying that you're going to cut off human interaction. He's going to give them a robot. So he's saying that, you know, it's like, I want to cut off all human interaction. You're already in a nursing home, right, and you're craving human interaction. He's a robot.
I am not implying that. What I'm implying is that if you need, you know, if they need help physically, because the robot is strong, doesn't get tired, can help them, you know, to walk around, chat with them, have discussions.
Chess. Okay. So this is what he's saying. He just wants to like completely kill off all human interaction, man. let's hope Enabong does not his next business venture is not a nursing home. Let's just put it that way. Okay. AI-powered nursing home.
I think that's probably what Connell Singhal has already purchased in as
that's,
well. As
that's what
website.
It sounds like. That definitely sounds like very much something that Connell Singhal, a business venture that Connell Singhal would be part of. All right. On the topic of AI, Google potentially wants to charge you for AI-powered search, right? So according to a new report from the Financial Times, Google is seriously considering charging for AI-powered search, currently known as the Search Generative Experience, SGE. This is the first time Google has ever thought about charging for a search program, so if it does, this will be big news. Now, we talked about the Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra, the S24 series with all of its new AI features, and you know, there was small print saying that these AI features will be free until the end of 2025. Now, again, we're not sure what's going to happen after that, but then potentially there may be a monthly charge or something like that, right? So it's kind of seemed like a bit of a trend that, you know, these AI features require a lot of processing power. Obviously, they require a lot of R&D and all of this. And offering these services for free may not be feasible for a lot of these companies. So they might now start considering to do a subscription. And obviously nowadays, everything's a subscription fee, right? It's gone past the time where, you know, you just pay off one off. Remember the good old days where you could just pay one off and just get a piece of software or a plugin and not have to worry about having to pay every single month about it. Remember the good old days?
Say bye-bye. It's gone. It's gone.
It's gone.
It's,
no. And certain aspects, I think it's fine. Like, for example, with Adobe, right? Initially, because I used to get the full Adobe suite. And then, you know, if you wanted to, you'd update it. And really, speaking, you'd be fine with what you had. And then you'd update it maybe every two or three generations. Now we've got the updates. But now with all of the new AI features, I'm like, you know what? It's actually worth it. Because now you're getting new features that are actually practical and usable that are all integrated within the Adobe suite. So I'm like, okay, that's something that I can understand. But now with all of these new AI features, it's like, okay, it's going to be a subscription. But yeah, that seems to be a trend now, that everything is going to be a subscription fee to be able to maintain it, to update it, to bring you new services, to cover the R&D, all of these things. I don't know. I don't think I'd pay for AI-powered search on Google. What about you?
No, but I think what's going to happen is search is going to change, and AI search, you know what I mean? Like, they're going to make it that you almost have to a certain point. And I think maybe Google is trying to find ways to make it relevant. I had a conversation with my cousin today about AI and Microsoft Copilot. And I fired it up on my PC here. I haven't done it in a while. And right below that, it said, get Copilot Pro. Immediately already, they're already pushing for Pro. and mm-hmm. she works in, you know, she works for big company, which I will not name, but she's like, well, one of the things
you
about
you almost mentioned it.
I know, right? Yeah. One of the things that she was talking about with Copilot, she's like, see, I like it. I like using the tools, but for a large business, it doesn't make sense. She said it was about $10 a user per account per user. So if you have 5,000 employees, it becomes really expensive. You know,
yeah.
It's better if you're a single individual like me, but then I hit get Copilot and he tells me Copilot is $20 a month for Copilot Pro. Mm-hmm. So it's over $200 a year just to use Copilot Pro. I don't know what those pro features are, but again, it's becoming a bit too expensive for me to think about that. ChatGPT, the pro version is $20 a month also as well. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. All these companies have to realize that it might be better to bake in some of that price as a hard cost in maybe say like the next Xbox or whatever hardware you have, right? Mm. And you kind of bake it in there, which you're not going to get as much as subscription, because subscription is just free money every month at this point for a lot of these companies. So I don't know.
This is the thing though. I also remember reading an article once about one of the Xiaomi sub-brands, right? Which was, I think it might just be Xiaomi in general, right? Where they actually don't make any profit on the hardware of their smartphones because they sell them for so cheap. They actually make money on the subscription services that they include with the devices, right?
Yes, I think it's Xiaomi. You're right. The profit margins of their hardware is very small.
Yeah, very small. So it's not actually a profitable business as such, like a largely profitable business as such, but then because of the subscription services that they sell alongside it, that's where they actually make the money. And it's the thing, isn't it? You sell somebody a product, just one off. It's like, okay, here you go, done. That's the end of that transaction, right? Now you sell them a subscription, like, you know, over time, that is going to, you know, even 6, 10, you know, 18, whatever, however many months down the line, you're still going to be getting a regular payment coming in from them. And this is one of the things that really annoys me on the app stores, because I remember before, like, you know, sometimes it's like these little photo editing apps where just like, you know, sometimes you want to just do a bit of a collage, like, you know, do a split screen of some images, and it used to be free, right? And then now it's like subscription. It's like, all I want this app to do is give me the same functionality. I don't want anything extra. Don't give me anything extra ever. Just give me what I've got here and I'll pay a one-off fee for it, right? Okay? Stop bombarding me with trying to sell me a subscription for something I'm going to use literally once every other month. I am not going to pay a subscription for something that I'm going to pay one, you know, use once every other month, right? And I'll just delete the app. It's just really, really annoying. But I get what they're doing from a business perspective, once again, you know, going back to that theory that as a business, okay, this is going to be really good for you. But like, at least give me the option, like, okay, limited functionality, this is what you're going to get. Pay a one-off, right? I'm going to pay you $5 for it or $10, whatever. And then now just leave me alone. I'm just going to use this one feature that I only use. Don't give me any of the extras, right? Leave all of that aside. But
it's gone, man. It's never coming back.
it's just annoying. This is the thing. It's annoying. I get it. Again, I get it from a business perspective, but it's just super annoying. Like, you know, just all of these things. Like sometimes when I buy plugins, right, for... an app, and it's just like, hey, great, I'm only going to use what I've got here. I don't want anything extra. Don't never give me anything extra. That's fine, just give me what's here. But then they'll kind of be like, oh yeah, but we want the app to work smoothly with all the different updates and this and that. It's like blah blah blah, just annoying. But hey, that's my rant.
And there you have Saf's rant about subscription services. If you'd like to hear more, do subscribe to the podcast.
Yes, subscribe to the podcast for free. Here's the thing. That's the thing. You can subscribe for free. You can follow us on Spotify. You can follow us on, you know, Apple Podcasts, all of the different podcasting platforms for free. And it will always be free, the podcast. I'm saying that right now. But then it's going to be $2.99 a month after. I'm joking.
So wait, when Singala takes over, you guys will gladly pay, because Singala services are just...
Yeah, the top notch. You just ask all of those poor old people in the nursing homes who are being taken, having no human interaction and just having to deal with robots.
It's clean and efficient.
Of course it is. All right, guys, that's all we have time for this episode. Hope you enjoyed it. Once again, if you did, then and you're watching this on YouTube, do like, comment, get involved. Drop us a rating on your favorite podcasting platforms as well. It really helps push this podcast to people who may not have heard of it. And we'll be back here next month with a new episode. Thanks for listening and watching. This is your host, Saf of Super Saf. And
Thunder E from Border Work.
And we'll see you next time.